When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveled in South India, he displayed his mercy like he had never displayed before. Because prior to that, he had lived in the Grihastha ashram, and for most of the time, he had simply absorbed himself in studying Nyaya, studying logic based on the Vedic tradition, and in this way, interpreting the meaning of various texts, and all based on Sanskrit, on rules of Sanskrit grammar and so on. Kind of dry. But after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Gaya, he went there to perform the ceremony after his father had left the planet on behalf of his father, the Shraddha ceremony. And there he met his spiritual master. And that was a great change in his life. Because from that day on, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to live as a devotee. And as he began to live as a devotee, he came back to Navadvip and he had completely changed, completely different from anything he'd ever been before. Although he was still teaching Sanskrit grammar, somehow or other, he began to see everything in the context of Krishna. And he could only speak about Krishna. And in fact, as he began to explain the meaning of the different Sanskrit words, he just explained in different ways, grammatically, how every word meant Krishna. So after 2 weeks of death, one day he asked his students and he said, "What do you think of my explanations? Are you finding any fault in them?" He said, "No, we cannot find any fault in them. We don't know how it is possible. But for 2 weeks you have explained that every single Sanskrit word simply means Krishna. And we cannot argue against it, because grammatically it is all correct what you have said." Still, the students were not satisfied, because they were feeling in this way, we're not learning any Sanskrit. We're only learning about Krishna. And because they still wanted to do something else with their lives, to spend all their time with Krishna seemed to be a bit more than they wanted. But for Nimai, it was not possible to do anything else after that. He began to spend all his time with Krishna. Every moment he simply wanted to speak about Krishna, hear about Krishna, and in that way his Krishna consciousness took proportions way beyond what was normal. It's all right to have some Krishna consciousness early in the morning. Before the world wakes up, you do some puja, that's all right. Even late in the evening, you ring a bell, you light a flame, that's okay. But all the time, it borders madness. It borders some form of religious madness. And history is full of such cases. Right? And is this really the aim of the Krishna consciousness movement? And the answer is yes. The aim of this Krishna consciousness movement is to drive people mad. Because what is considered to be mad is actually normal. And what is considered to be normal is actually mad. Right? That is the reality. What is considered very normal, right, and very well behaved and very cultured and very civilized is not normal at all, and is not well behaved at all, is not civilized at all, and is not cultured at all. Like here, people live in nice little blocks, a nice regulated life, where everything is in its place. right? People are in their place, cars are in their place, everything, thoughts are in their place, words are in their place, everything is in its place. But everything is in the wrong place, right? And everyone is just actually totally abnormal, right? Totally. Although it is considered very, very well thought out, very balanced, very civilized, it is totally barbarian, what is going on, right? There's not a grain of civilization in it. Because civilized behavior is that behavior which is non-violent. Right? Barbarian behavior can be classified as violent behavior. Violent to the self and violent to the environment. And the whole world, in the name of peace, is actually violent and barbarian. Because everyone is establishing his peace at the expense of so many others, and at the expense of the environment, at the expense of the planet we live on, at the expense of the lives of so many living entities. We are establishing a little peaceful corner. This is the way of the barbarian. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, shortly after, took sannyas. And after he took sannyas, he started what is known as his Acharya Lila, his pastimes as a spiritual teacher. At that time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to South India, and of course, he distributed Krishna consciousness to the masses. He went to places and got people to chant the holy name in ecstasy, and people got so swept up in that ecstasy that they permanently changed. They developed the deepest emotions of love of God. And it said those people went to their village and they transformed their whole village. And in this way, so many people became influenced by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Still, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the descriptions about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's travels, we find that he was had certain important meetings in South India. He met with representatives of the other Vaishnav Sampradayas. In the Padma Purana, it is mentioned that there are four bona fide sampradayas, four bona fide disciplic successions, which are all, which can all deliver their followers from the cycle of birth and death, which can all offer to their followers an eternal condition of life, either in Vaikuntha or in Golok, and therefore they are bona fide. Although amongst them there are big differences in philosophical understanding. Amongst these four sampradayas, at times there are many great differences. Madhavacharya had established that the worship of Lord Vishnu is the essence in life. The Vaishnavas agree with that. Madhavacharya had established that the Vedas are the only source of proof. The Vaishnavas agree with that. Any other form of proof is no proof at all. So-called scientific proof, it is no proof. Right? Even mathematical proof ultimately falls short. Therefore, proof is only Veda. Dharmam tu saksad bhagavat pranitam. Because Veda is revealed knowledge. It is not based on the small intelligence of small men who are really very proud and who think that they have the capacity to figure out the unlimited reality. Even the attempt is foolish. According to Vedic scripture, that's impossible. We cannot know by our own intellectual power ever the reality. Not possible. Pantas tukuti satavatsarasam pragamyu vayoratapi manaso munipungalanam. By dint of our own mental speculation, one cannot even touch the tip of the toe of the Supreme Light. That is not possible. That is only possible by the mercy of the devotee. Through the mercy of the devotee, we can actually recognize the Supreme Lord and come to the point that we are that we understand our position as devotees of the Supreme Lord. Then, when we become devotees of the Lord, we lose all taste for all this philosophical wrangling and arguing and debating and so on. It's just a total waste of time. The whole world is overeducated. This is the biggest problem in this time. People have too much education. And the result is that they become very proud. They think they know everything. And in reality, don't know very much at all. We may look at modern man, and modern man is quite an interesting species, right? Because modern man is thinking that never before in history did mankind know as much as we do today. Of course, you know, in some ancient cultures, mind you, they actually knew the position of the stars, right? In some ancient cultures, they certainly had interesting knowledge of astronomy. In some ancient cultures, it was amazing how much knowledge they actually had with the primitive means that were at their disposal. Of course, these days we can reach similar conclusions, but with a little more refinement, with our modern level of advancement. Naturally, these days, we can remove a lot of misconceptions, a lot of illusions, and a lot of false ideas have come and replaced them for simple fact by means of science. What rubbish. What is your science? What is your science? Where have you found any truth? One famous philosopher of science, there is a branch of philosophy called philosophy of science. I know. You are attracted to me. I see it. And you want to be on this sofa. And you can forget it. No way. Good. So, modern science. Popper said that every time they established a particular theory as the truth, then after some time it turned out not to be the case because it was replaced by a new theory. Therefore, whatever science has offered us, the truth is it's not. Yeah. But still, Mother Man is very proud and is thinking that in the ocean of nescience, there is a great island, a continent of knowledge, the knowledge of modern man. I would agree with that continent. However, I would like to present that that continent is a drifting continent. And that, in other words, that as we are gaining more knowledge in one area, we forget more and more knowledge in other areas. And in this way, modern man has lost knowledge of herbs, right? I wouldn't know what to eat if you sent me into the forest. The only thing I would know how to eat is okay. The only thing I would know how to eat is nettles, stinging nettles. Right? Because stinging nettles, they sting, you know, that I would be able to test, and in that way I'd be sure that that's edible. But anything else, I wouldn't have no idea. As far as what you can eat in the forest, maybe some people know a little more than I do, but still it would be quite a limited diet. Yeah? I mean, a few berries, maybe, etc. Could we live on that? Yeah. So we are so estranged from nature. When I was about 10 years old, I went for the first time in my life to a farm. And when I saw where the milk was coming from, I didn't drink milk for a week. So instead of the nice, clean cartons, you know, oh, that cow and stool on the backside, so close to my milk. I couldn't drink milk for a week. Yeah. Like that, we have become so estranged, and yet we are so estranged from nature, so estranged from life, and yet we are so proud of our knowledge. Right? And we think that we have reached the highest point of civilization that mankind has ever reached. We really think so. That's actually, it happens to be so. Accidentally, our generation happens to be the most advanced, the most civilized. We have just now reached the highest peak, right, that human civilization has ever reached. A coincidence. It's us, of course. Right? What a funny outlook on life, if you think about it. Right? But this is actually what exists. One who finds out about Krishna realizes that that which is presented as science is in reality not science, but just religion, just some belief. Belief in certain ideas. And that which is known in the world as religious, namely Krishna conscious, that is science. That is a fact. This Krishna consciousness is actually science. Because it deals with facts that don't change. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead today, and Krishna will be the Supreme Personality of Godhead tomorrow, and so on. In the beginning, when Prabhupada opened up his storefront in New York and started lecturing, some of the people who came to the shop were wondering, what will the Swami be lecturing on today? Get it? If you're not careful, we're going to send you out in the snow.
Yeah, send them out in the snow,
So we Krishna, when Prabhupada was lecturing in those early days, then some of the visitors thought, what will the Swami be lecturing on tomorrow? The I Ching? Or would it be maybe the Egyptian Book of the Dead? Yeah. And they thought that all these things were spiritual, that all these things were transcendental, and that the Swami would be speaking on all of them, and sort of take the essence from everywhere and anywhere, and then sort of mix all that together. But Prabhupada just kept on repeating the same message the message of Bhagavad Gita, and just focused on that again and again. And we too, we just simply speak about Krishna. Another story from those early days was about Prabhupada, one of Prabhupada's early followers, whose name was Steve. Steve had become a devotee, and an old friend of his, Murray, came to visit. And they had really grown apart, in a sense. Steve is saying, you know, it's really wonderful. The Swami is lecturing from scriptures that are 5,000 years old. And, you know, none of the conclusions have changed. He's presenting exactly the same message. And Murray said, well, I think it doesn't make sense to preoccupy ourselves with knowledge of 5,000 years old. I think we should be dealing with some contemporary issues. That's more important. So it was difficult to get the message across. So people may not understand why we are dealing with the Bhagavad Gita. But then again, a little intelligence immediately shows that there's some sense to that. Because why would the truth of 5,000 years ago be different than the truth today? People are people. 5,000 years ago, people had two eyes, two hands, two feet, and so on. Yeah? The same. People had the same needs as we see today. The story of Caesar and Cleopatra and all that is not so much different. Romeo and Juliet, what has changed? Nothing new. Right? Now in our Krishna conscious movement, we have Bhakti Romeo and Bhakti and Juliet. That's all. Right? But everything is the same. Right? Nothing has changed. It is the same dynamics, the same human dynamics. Human beings are human beings. Cats are cats. And like that, everyone's nature is still the same. And therefore, the same knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is still completely relevant today, dealing with the same human nature, the same human needs, describing the same universe. So in this way, the truth does not change. It remains the same. Therefore, we stick with the same transcendental knowledge. Our message is the same. Our process is the same. First of all, we realize that we are spiritual beings and not the body. Animals cannot. Animals think they are the body. But human beings have the opportunity to understand that they are eternal spirit soul. But the tendency of human beings is to also think that they are the body. Only by hearing transcendental knowledge again and again can we get off the bodily platform. Otherwise, even if we hear it once a month, we'll still be on the bodily platform. Even if we hear it once a week, we still be on the bodily platform. Even if we hear it once a day, we'll still be on the bodily platform. Even if we hear it once every hour, we'll still be on the bodily platform. We have to constantly hear. And this is actually something, yes, but I really don't want you. No, that's okay. Yeah. That's all right. No. It's funny, and it's also not funny. It's both. Okay. Krishna has a sense of humor. Krishna plays with the material energy. But the point is this, is that to rise above the bodily platform is our opportunity. But it's not so easily done. We take it too cheap. We think, well, you know, I've heard it, so I know it. Because our tendency is, we read a book one time and then we think, well, I know this. Is there a new book? Yeah. Anything else to read now? I know this already. But it's not so simple. Because the Vedic concept of knowledge is different than our modern-day concept of knowledge. A modern-day concept, you hear it once, and now you know it, and now is there anything else to know? But in the Vedic concept, knowing means remembering. Yeah? Knowing means remembering all the time. And this is our problem. Yeah? If we are lacking in Krishna consciousness, it's because we are not remembering. We hear this knowledge, and yet we're not remembering. Because we hear we're not the body, and yet when the body pushes us and starts demanding things from us, then we forget. And then we still act upon these pushings of the body. Although philosophically we can give a big explanation how we are not. And therefore, we have to really increase our hearing. I think if you ask me what is the biggest problem that devotees have, I think it's that they're not hearing. I think devotees generally chant 16 rounds because, you know, that's measurable. Yeah? That's very measurable. You do it or you don't. If you don't chant your 16 rounds, it stands out that you're not doing it. But hearing is such a thing, it just doesn't happen. And the reason why we are struggling with Krishna consciousness is just because we're not hearing. That's the only thing. The reason why we feel weak is because we're not hearing. The reason why the material energy gets the better of us is because we're not hearing. We need to hear much more about Krishna, much more philosophy from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam again and again. And we have to make better arrangements for that. If we want this science of Krishna consciousness to be successful. It is a science in that anybody who follows the Bhagavad Gita will change, will become a transcendental personality. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went out preaching in South India, it was all by miracle. It was all by magic touch. Simply upon seeing him, they had immediately the topmost love of God. It doesn't work like that for us. Right? For us, now in this time, we have to do a little more work. But if we do the work and really go deep into hearing about Krishna, just like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spent all his time with Krishna, he had no more interest in anything else. And if he would just simply do that, just simply talk about Krishna, forget about everything else, forget about logic. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, if you're interested in logic, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Daya Karaha Vichara, Vichara Karila Chitta Pabachamatkar. If you are interested in logic, then apply that interest in logic in trying to understand the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then you will find that it's amazing. In your heart, you will get that experience of how amazing it is. That's how he said. So, yes, we use logic trying to understand the words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the words of Bhagavad Gita, and see how it's logical and so on. But the logic of science, the logic of mundane institutions, the logic of the newspaper, the logic of the television, oh my God, we don't want to have anything to do with it. Nothing. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to know it. We just want to talk about Krishna all the time. And if we somehow or other can do that, then we'll see tremendous results in our spiritual life. At present, maybe we are not seeing yet, right, these great results. Then we should invest more. We should just invest more. More chanting. Longer. We can start again. More hearing. We take the next verse. After we finish the Gita, we take the next book. One can have discussions on Krishna every day. And that's what is meant to be. To come together sometimes will not do. It will not be enough to feel inspired in Krishna. If we really want to feel inspired, we have to give it much more energy. We have to give it all our energy. It comes to a point, all our energy just for Krishna. Only then can we feel inspired. One moment not given to Krishna is an uninspiring moment. It comes to that. So this is maybe the more advanced level of Krishna consciousness I'm describing. There are many levels given. It is said that in the beginning we develop some conviction, yes, this Krishna consciousness is the right thing. But we cannot give it so much of our time and energy. But then we gradually learn something about cultivating Krishna consciousness, and we begin to create an environment where Krishna is present, pictures of Krishna, worship of Krishna, offering food stuffs to Krishna. That's there. But then gradually we become purified, and gradually our desire to involve ourselves with Krishna is growing. And the more we invest then, the more it will grow. So these are the more advanced stages, and this is what we actually want. This is what we want. We want that all devotees come to this more advanced stage, because we are not a church. In a church, it's just a matter of belonging to the group. You know, you be a member. As long as you are a member, you're okay. And as long as you are regularly coming to the church, everything is fine. And if you've been coming to the church for a long time, then you are a senior member, and then you will be getting a lot of respect, and everyone will consider you a very religious person. But in our movement, even if one externally takes on all the attributes, even if one moves in the temple and shaves the head or wears dhoti sari and all these things, not good enough. It's not good enough. We're not satisfied. Even if you learn all kinds of slokas, even if you can recite half the Bhagavad Gita by heart, we can begin 7th chapter. Start reciting Maya Shaktamanaparta. I'm sure tapas can do. Maya Shaktamanaparta, Yogin Yunavadasraya, Asansayan Samagravam, Vitagya Sasitaskin, Jnana Dham Savikya. You can do. Number 3? 7-3? Manushyanam Sahasyasi. Anyway, like that, we can remember so many verses. But that's not good enough. One can learn the whole Brahma Samhita. That has to be long, that. Tamaham vajami. even a meter and everything. No? It's not good enough. It is not good enough. One can learn to do all the tricks, and so on, mudras, and one can, but that's not good enough. One can move all the furniture around in the house and consider vastu, a corner for study in the house, auspicious corner, the northeast corner for the altar, and so on and so on. And that's not good enough. Is anything good enough? Only if you give everything. Only everything. Only that's good enough. No less. We want everything. Only then it's good enough. Complete. The whole thing. Complete surrender. Only that's good enough. Of course, the calling is out to everyone. And many are laughing, you know, saying like, oh, that was a good one. that was a good one. We remember that, you know. But few are actually taking it to heart. Yeah. But we see that Srila Prabhupada and his spiritual master said simply that if one... If somehow or other I will make one pure devotee, only one, I'll consider my mission a success. So that's the mission. The expectations are not so high. But one. So if there's one person who listens, one person who says, yes, me, then that is the idea. So pure devotee is really the idea. Nothing less. Because everything else is actually mad. As long as we're not pure devotees, we're still mad. Half mad, one quarter mad, 10% mad. That maybe no longer raving mad, because we're following the regulative principles, we're chanting Hare Krishna, but still mad to some degree. That has to be honest. So pure devotional service is really what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. And pure devotional service is the message of the Bhagavad Gita. Pure devotional service is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's for pure devotional service that we have come together, actually. And any less, it's not really good enough. Of course, we know it's not so easy. Yeah? Now comes part three. Yeah? Part three is back to reality. Right? So part one was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Part two is like what we are supposed to be. And part three is what we really are. Yeah? And we see that life goes quick. And we see that one gives a life to Krishna, right? To some extent. And we see another year's gone by. Huh? I've been here before, last winter, in his house, right? This winter here. I don't know where I'll be next winter. Right? But if I'll be in Sweden again, yes, I will come. To some house, why not? I've been in the house of the twins here in Sweden, in Stockholm. Been in different houses. And each time, same people, but the time has moved along. A few other ones, but many of the same. But the time is moving along. In some it doesn't show so much. In some it does. It shows in many ways. Whether it shows or not, time is moving along. And what have we already achieved? If I look at myself, what have I achieved? And sometimes I start thinking that whatever service I have done in this life, will it be enough? Will it actually be enough? Huh? Those kind of questions come sometimes. And at times like that, I'm thinking, probably not. Then what to do? I'm thinking, I need blessings. Then I need blessings from all the devotees, because the devotees, they have done a lot of service for Krishna. And therefore, they have the mercy of Krishna. They have the blessings of Krishna. So if the devotees will bless me, then Krishna will surely consider that in my case. So therefore, now that I'm realizing that my own services might be falling short, now that I get to that stage, I begin to think, I need blessings from the devotees. More and more, I begin to think that I need the blessings of the devotees. How to get? Then I have to please them. Otherwise, how will they bless me? It's not so easy. So in this way, gradually we realize that we need all the blessings we can get. And then maybe, we can become eligible to get the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because this particular human form of life is very rarely attained. We could have also been a cat, right? And just do what all cats do, right? Because not only this cat is trying to get onto the sofa, every cat is always trying to get onto the sofa. And the Swami always gets the sofa. And therefore, the pastime that you have witnessed here, I'm going through it every time. Therefore, as soon as I saw the cat, I grabbed a weapon. Because I knew he's envious. He's envious of my sofa. And yes. And he wants to be on there too. I knew it. So, we could have been a cat. Ignorant. But we are human beings. We could have been some ordinary, gross guy on the block. Right? Some guy drinking beer and scratching his belly and watching football. We could have been. We could have been Helga and Hagar, right? And the whole thing, you know, the whole story, right? I'm sure you know all about Helga and Hagar. No? You don't know? You haven't? No? The cartoons?
Yes.
Here you know, right? Hagar the Viking and Helga, his wife, who's very heavy, right? She's like very strong. So, every day, Helga was harassing Hagar that he had to wash the dishes. And he got so fed up with it, you know, washing these dishes, that he decided to leave home. And Hagar went into the mountains, and he climbed a mountain. And as he was getting high up the mountain, he went to a cave, and there was a sage with a long white beard. And Hagar went to the sage and said, "My dear sage, please tell me, what is the secret to avoid all the miseries of life?" The sage looked him deep in the eyes and said, "Avoid the company of women." Hagar said, I knew it. And he was thinking of the dishes. And you see in the bubble above his head, you see he's thinking of the dishes. And then, you know, he goes back down the mountain, and meanwhile from the cave there is a voice. And the voice says, "Who are you talking to there?" And it's the wife of the sage, you know. And the sage says, "Nobody, dear." And then she just goes, "Go wash the dishes." And he's washing the dishes. We too could have been Hagar and Helga, right? We could have been. But somehow or other, don't ask me how, something happened. We got transcendental knowledge. And suddenly we got the opportunity to go beyond the bodily platform, beyond the cats and dogs lifestyle of the human beings of this age. And we could actually go to the platform of becoming, of taking up spiritual life. Although it's not our culture, but we get the chance. We get the chance. But so difficult, because so much distraction. Therefore, we are here today to kind of remember, what to do with our life. Not to waste it, but to take advantage and to spend more time with Krishna, to increase the time spent with Krishna. That's our only hope. Our only hope. And more times together with devotees, Like, one time I gave a simple calculation, and I'll give it again tonight here. And the calculation was this, that if you have, it takes only 30 people, right? And if 30 people invite each other once a month to their house, right? And they cook a feast, then you have to cook only once a month. And every night you get a feast, and every night there's a program. And, you have to cook only once a month. And it's a great solution in life. It's cheap, it's ecstatic, you get association. And therefore my proposal is that, 22. Well, 22 days already covered. Only 8 more. Right? 8 or 9 more. And we've got the whole month covered. Right? Gonna cook only once a month. Every night, a feast. Here's another one. Day 23. So considering that, in conclusion, I would like to say that it is mentioned in the scriptures that there should always be guests in one's house. Not a day should go by without receiving guests. Every day, some guests should be there. That gives, and of course, as devotees, that gives us the opportunity to have some excuse, right? To offer something special to Krishna, to have a little program, little kirtan, little bhaja, every day. So that it becomes a way of life. That's the idea. That's the way to become a pure devotee. So partially it goes automatic, just by the chanting and being around the devotees, and partially it takes great endeavor. And that's what's needed. So any questions, any comments? All I have said.
Which is about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I just wondered what was the final thing that made Advaita Acharya pray that Chaitanya would come? What was his final, like, I can't take it anymore?
Well, Advaita Acharya himself is an incarnation of Mahavishnu. So he's also Vishnu. He's also the Supreme Lord. And, however, he is not Govindam Adipurisham. He is not the original form of the Lord. He is rather an avatar of the Lord, an expansion of the Lord. He is known as Lord Mahavishnu, is an expansion of Krishna. And Krishna has unique qualities. Krishna, it is said, has qualities that no other Vishnu form has. It is said that the four unique qualities of Krishna are described to be Lila Madhurya, Prema Madhurya, Rupa Madhurya, and Venu Madhurya. Which means that Krishna is performing amazing pastimes with his devotees in very intimate, loving relationships with no other manifestation of Vishnu is doing. Krishna is driving everyone mad with love, Prema Madhurya. Krishna is unlimitedly beautiful. No one can match. And when Krishna plays his flute, everyone goes mad. Right? So therefore, what Krishna can give, no other incarnation of Vishnu can give. So Advaita Acharya, although he was a form of Vishnu, that special quality of Krishna from Vrindavan he could not give. And Advaita Acharya knew it very well. And he himself wanted to see that miracle. He wanted to see how Krishna would come into this world and show the miracle of Vrindavan in his pastimes. That's what he wanted to see. Therefore, Advaita Acharya was waiting. Although, in the house of Srivas, every night the Vaishnavas would come together and would have kirtan. And the neighbors, they were really disturbing. So it is said the house of Srivas was made of bamboo poles and the walls were made of mats because it's warm in Mayapur and a little ventilation is nice. Here you don't want any ventilation, but there you want, right? A little air coming through the house. So the walls are made of mats. So the neighbors, they one day said, in this house of Srivas, they're partying every night, they're howling every night. If this doesn't stop, we will cut the house of Srivas and throw it in the river. When Advaita Acharya heard that, he said, if now the Lord doesn't appear very soon, I will personally cut the head of these demons. Because that Lord Vishnu is doing. Paritanaya sadhanam vinasaya saduskitam dharma samstapanatiya sambhavami yuge yuge. He comes to annihilate the demons, to establish the principles of religion. But he could not give the love of Golok. That only Krishna can give. So he restrained himself and waited. Then he read in one scripture that if you offer me a little water and just some leaves, then I become so grateful, so indebted, that I don't have anything in my possession to repay it, and all I can do is simply offer myself. When Advaita Acharya read that set, he said, now I found it. And he performed this puja to the Shaligram Shila with Ganga water and Tulasi leaves. And it was not a puja, it was a conspiracy. After reading that verse, it simply was not an adoration or worship, it was a means to force the Lord to appear. So in this way, Advaita Acharya was performing his daily puja with Ganga water and Tulasi leaf, knowing that now the Lord will have to offer himself. So that happened in due course of time. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would give the credit for his appearance in this world to Advaita Acharya. He said, he made me come. It is because of him that I came. And also because of Haridas Thakur, who was chanting purely on the banks of the Ganges. So Vishnu appears again and again to establish principles of religion and annihilate the demons. But Krishna, and every day of Brahma, there are 1,000 cycles of 4 yugas, and Vishnu appears 1,000 times, right? In many times actually, but in each of the yugas, in many forms, he appears. But Krishna appears only once in a day of Brahma, and Lord Chaitanya appears only once in a day of Brahma, to give what no one else can give, the love of Golok. That's what Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are giving. Krishna gives it to a few and shows his pastimes, but Lord Chaitanya gives it to everyone. That's why Advaita Acharya had to wait for Lord Chaitanya. Anyone?
You say that there will be 1,000 times these yugas repeating themselves.
Yeah.
And then the universe will be destroyed.
Sahasra yuga paryantam. 1,000 yugas in a day of Brahma.
I was wondering, in the end of Kali Yuga, when the planet is almost destroyed, and all the fabrics and all the...
At the end of Kali Yuga?
Yeah, when the planet will be almost useless.
Mm.
How it goes further to...
It is said that between the yugas, as it goes from one other yuga into the other one, that is called Sandhya, the joining of the two yugas. And it said that is a period when the atmosphere changes, and it is a period which is predominated by sages who are then establishing the particular dharma for the yuga that is to come.
Mm-hmm.
So such a Sandhya period will start at the end. Yeah? So by an arrangement of the Lord at the joint of two yugas, the atmosphere changes, and there's a special period in which sages predominate the whole atmosphere. That's what will happen. Before that, Kalki will cut a few heads.
No, because I have a picture of Satya Yuga when everything is green and everything is like...
So the changes, after Kalki has cut a few heads and so on, then after that the Sandhya period begins and the sages take over and the conditions on earth are being adjusted again.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets ready for the next yuga. And everything becomes ready for that. And the sages begin to establish the religious principles for that.
So was it like this, like shifting between yugas when the dinosaurs died? Right?
Yeah, you know, whatever the dinosaurs... Yeah, sure.
I'm just curious.
In English we say the dinosaurs, you know. We talk about something very old and stale. Yeah. Prabhupada said that the bones of the dinosaurs are left over from a previous Kali Yuga.
Uh-huh.
He said that in some Kali Yugas the reptiles become very big, and in some Kali Yugas the insects become very big. Yeah. And he said these bones are left over from a previous Kali Yuga.
Mm.
That's all. So the dating is wrong. But once there was a time when the dinosaurs were walking on Earth, that is a fact, in the previous Kali Yuga. Believe it or not.
It's interesting.
They date things by the radiocarbon method, you know, which like shows how a certain radioactivity is stored in the bones, and it's supposed to decrease over time, and then they can calculate how much is decreased. But there are certain things in the calculation that are considered, and that is that the rate that this radioactivity is decreasing is always going to be the same, that it's constant. There's no guarantee that it's constant at all. Yeah? And if it's not constant, then the whole theory of dating just falls flat on its face. Just to name one defect in the whole theory. So they're so proud of that theory of dating, but just one little factor, if the decrease of radioactivity is not a constant factor, the whole thing stinks, and therefore it's totally unreliable and cannot be taken as scientific or factual at all. It is just the foolishness of modern man who is so proud of his own learning and his own tricks. So therefore they have misjudged the age of the bones. The bones are from the previous Kali Yuga. Speak, O speak, O forever hold thy peace.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I was trying to think logically. You have a lot of historical monuments all over the world, and they are like a few thousands of years old, and they are already like a few meters in the ground. And when you take these dinosaurs' bones, they are so many millions of years old, and they scratch the surface like a few centimeters, and they are already there. So this is.
I don't
like
think
kind of
so.
Fishing.
I think you know, like there are geological findings that according to them match certain eras, right? Deep in the earth and so on, and they have identified the different layers of earth also according to certain time eras, Pleistocene and so on and so on. However, there certainly are many findings, right, that are found in layers. Fossil records are found in layers where they're not supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for that you can read Forbidden Archaeology from morning till night for the next 3 years. And then you can give a great lecture on all these things, if you have the patience and tolerance to go through the austerity. If not, then we can leave it at this. Bones. I never had much interest in bones. Bones are for dogs. Yeah, so maybe the kitchen. I think so. It's 8:30. It's a good time to have a little snack, I think. You want to show?